Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and this is episode 99. Thank you guys for downloading. Thank you for listening. And if you've been listening to the show for the last little bit, if we go back to episode 96, at the end of episode 96, I made a shout out to today's guest, Ricky Lima. On the episode where I interviewed or hung out, I should say, with his partner in crime, Shane Heron of the Black Hole Hunters Club, I said, Ricky Lima, I'm coming for you next. And I got the chance, the privilege to be able to connect with Ricky Lima in the city of Toronto. We're able to go out to a pub. We broke bread. We talked comics. We talked music. We had a great time. We even get into some top five lists, some of Ricky's top fives. And I got that inspiration from, of course, The Cave of Solitude does a lot of top five shows, but I don't think I've ever done a top five. Well, I did one with Shane Heron, that's true, but special shout out to Martin Slam Duncan, the fastball special, for inspiring me to do another top five with a creator. I enjoy hearing him do it when he interviews creators, so I thought I'd do the same thing with Ricky. And it kind of breaks down the walls a little bit, lets the listener get to know the creator a little bit more, what their tastes and the things that they're interested in. So we had a great time. Special shout out to Ricky for being so generous with his time. It's been a ton of fun being able to reach out to local creators, be able to hang out with him in very comfortable settings and just have nice natural conversation. I hope you all enjoy it. Again, this is episode 99, so it was real cool to have him on for such a big episode before the big 100. I hope you guys stay tuned for that. We're going to have a ton of fun, have some special guests on for episode 100, but that's not what you're here for today. This is the Ricky Lima Show. We're going to get into it. It's extensive. It's a lot of fun. And just an editor's note, you're going to hear some ambient noise in the background because we filmed it. We recorded it live on location at the Poppers Pub in the city. So you're going to hear some conversation in the background, but you can clearly hear me and Ricky Lima. Without further ado, episode 99, Ricky the Dragon Lima. Welcome back, everybody. We are here with the writer and co-creator of the indie comic hits such as Black Hole Hunters Club, Happily Ever After, as well as The Deep Sea. We are here with the king of Kickstarter, and I christen you the Portuguese Prince.
All right, okay.
And if you recognize the sound of the voice, that is the one and only Ricky Lima.
Thank you.
Say hello to your fans and all your friends, Ricky.
Hey guys, how is everyone? It's a good intro, isn't it? Everybody called, king of Kickstarter.
King of Kickstarter, because you know what? Shane was telling me how your partner in Black Hole Hunters Club, Shane Heron, who was on the show recently, he said how you're a big supporter of Kickstarter, and it's worked out pretty well for you, right?
Kickstarter is great, man. Like it allows people to do things that maybe they couldn't do before. You know what I mean? Which is really good. And it allows you to, like, live that indie spirit of, like, doing it on your own. And, like, what I love about Kickstarter, like, a lot of people are like, man, there's so many Kickstarters now, and, you know, everyone's doing a Kickstarter. But that means that there's more people making comics, you know what I mean? Which is great. And that's what I want to see, right? Like, it doesn't matter if there's a new Kickstarter every week, as long as people are making stuff, right?
Like, yeah.
I'll support that. What sucks is, like, my wallet can't physically support all that.
Yeah, it's
but
true.
I try at least, you know?
Kickstarter was something I always heard people talk about on different podcasts, like, even pros that were doing their own comic. And I was like, what is this Kickstarter thing? How do you get involved in it? And then at the same time, when new people are doing it that are kind of unknowns, but they're making a name for themselves, you're wondering, is it going to be good? How do I know?
Yeah, that's tough.
But when I saw the Art T. Bear Kickstarter that he had promoted on a podcast, and seeing that you do a little video to kind of show what it is you're working on, the democracy of it is pretty awesome because, you know, people get behind it because you've given them something to believe in.
Yeah, I really think that's great. One of the problems I think I find with Kickstarter, though, is that it's, when you make a comic, you have to be so polished and, like, perfect in the Kickstarter, or else people will be like, well, I don't know about this, I don't want to back it, which sucks, because then you have people who, like, are only going to release books that have been market tested and, like, you know, like, are clean and polished and beautiful, and it's like, well, I mean, what about, you know, these, like, crappy little book that, you know, someone stapled in the basement? Like, I that's the kind of stuff that I want, because that's, like, more honest. But those things will never really make it on Kickstarter just because the people are like, oh, it looks like crap, or it's not, like, polished or anything. So it's kind of weird, right? Now we're entering into an era of, like, indie comics as corporate products, which I would never have thought would have happened.
Here's our food. We are
not quite all for you.
Not all. You can. If anyone made a mistake, that's all good.
Do you have the Cajun wings?
Cajun's meat. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you.
Awesome. Very well. Did you guys need anything else right now?
No, I'm all right.
I think we're good. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you very much. So, editor's note, we are recording live on location at the Poppers Pub around, what's the street? Spadina and Bloor, roughly? We don't want to give exactly where we are.
Let me pull out my GPS.
should we eat through it and just talk with our mouths full, or should we take a pause?
We can pause.
Yeah. We can pause. Okay. we'll be right back. We're just going to stuff our faces for a second. Okay, we have eaten, we are satisfied, we are back. I don't remember where we left off.
I was talking about, hey, can we get a picture of me?
Or, we actually don't do pictures, we only go by the pints.
Okay, well, I'll get another pint of Canadian. You want?
I'll finish this one first and then I'll get another one. Thank you.
Yeah, I was talking about Kickstarter, you got a big polished product.
Right.
Now that's kind of hindering people who don't have polished products.
What was your first Kickstarter that you worked on?
That was Deep Sea, the one that you have there.
Okay.
And that one, it was pretty polished. I mean, I was surprised. But our goal was $5,000, and we need just over $5,000. So, and I was like through the roof for that, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And then the second Kickstarter I did was Happily Ever After, and that was, the goal was $4,000. And we hit that in 6 days, and I was like, oh, shit, what? So... yeah, so then by the end of it, I made about $7,000, which is, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then the newest one I did, I was like, yo, $15,000, I don't even care. We just barely hit $15,000, and that was a scary one, man. That was tough.
How does it feel though when you hit that goal and you see that, whether it's 4,000, yeah. 5,000, 15 is
crazy. 15 is crazy, man, especially for like one guy. Like with Kickstarter, a lot of people just do anthologies because it's like they have a lot of people involved in these anthologies. But like the Happily Ever After, it was like just me, man. Like that was it. It wasn't like it was an anthology or anything. It was just me. So that's pretty crazy. How does it feel? It feels pretty good, man. Like it's but it's a lot of pressure too, because now you have, you know, over 400 people who are waiting for the book, and you got to produce, and you got to produce something that's worthwhile, you know. So.
What's that turnover time? When once you like, you obviously started the project before you did the Kickstarter, but then now to finish it and get it out there, what's that process?
So we launched in July, June or July, and then I set the goal for February of next year. So that's, you know, a good 6 months maybe. But I don't know if we're going to hit that. I don't know. We'll have to see. The artist is, I mean, what he's doing is really good, but sometimes it takes a little bit of time. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and rush him to do a book, you know, just because, like, just to get it done. So, like, I want to release a good product. So if we have to wait a bit, then we'll have to wait. But with the first one, Happily Ever After One, we did, I had pretty much had it done before we launched the Kickstarter. Okay. And so I paid for all that with credit cards and stuff, which is probably not the best idea. But I did that, and then luckily we made all that money back, so that was good.
So tell us a little bit about Happily Ever After.
Yeah.
Are they like Deep Sea, where it's like a complete graphic novel story, or are they...
Yeah, so the first one that we did was just an issue one, and my original plan was to do issue 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then that would be done, and then do a graphic novel. But it was like, after the first one, I realized that I don't think people really care about single issues, especially like the Kickstarter crowd. I don't think they really want single issues. So I was like, well, let's just do a graphic novel, because I feel like nowadays people want to read like the single story and just have it done. You know what I mean? So that's... it's just simple and it's just done.
You're right.
So you don't have to like worry about financing issue 3 or 4. And
it's just a nice product that someone can get a whole story out of.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Right?
So, instead of feeling incomplete, yeah. I guess, after one.
Yeah, so it sucks that you have to, you know, set your goal at $15,000, but you're also selling your book at $20 as opposed to $5.
Right. So. The thing about Kickstarter that frightened me when I went on it was when I looked at some of the stuff that I was interested in and then I would pledge or want, like, the product. The book was $25. The shipping was, like, $40. Dude. And I'm like,
Yeah, shipping, like, it's tough, especially here in Canada. Shipping's, like, whack. But there's a service, Chit Chat Express, that, like, really helps us with shipping. They'll, like, give you U.S. rates and stuff and do all that. So, if you're looking to ship stuff, Chit Chat Express.
There you go. King of Kickstarter has spoken.
Yeah, there you go.
Three successful Kickstarters. That's great. Yeah.
On my list, technically, it's 4 because I helped Shane with his. He made me a collaborator, so on my list it says 4.
Oh, look at that. Nice. Yeah, definitely the wearing the crown. So, we started like halfway into your story of all of the books that you've successfully worked on so far. So let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up.
Jeez. Well, I originally am from my dad's balls. I stole that from Just for Laughs a bit. I heard that on a stage show. I don't know. Like, yeah, I grew up in Brampton, still live there. And it's pretty shitty usually. Nothing's going on. The problem with Brampton is it's so close to Toronto that any of the cool people living in Brampton, they're like, well, I'll just go to Toronto and do cool things there.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, I mean, yeah, you can do that, but now nothing cool is happening in Brampton, you know what I mean? Like, basically, the city shuts down at, like, 6 o'clock, and you're just like...
People are just going home.
Yeah, you're basically. Like, yo, man, what's going on? Nothing happens in Brampton. But there's a lot of people who are trying to change it, doing, like, art stuff in Brampton, but it's... I don't feel like a lot of them come from a place of genuine love of doing cool stuff. I feel like they want to make money doing stuff, you know what I mean? Which kind of sucks. And I mean, everyone should make money, sure, but I don't know, that shouldn't be your goal, for especially when it comes to art and stuff.
Should come from the love, the passion.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I love shit like this, like these podcasts. Like, you're not getting paid for this, and you're still like busting your ass doing this stuff, right?
It's just fun to hang out with people that you meet that are creative.
And you live in Toronto. It's bullshit. Where's like, the people like that in Brampton, man? They don't exist.
You know what the problem with I would have come to Brampton, no problem, is that traffic. The traffic would drive me bonkers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the problem is it grew too big, too fast.
Right.
And they didn't, infrastructure wasn't really like what they thought of. So now it's like, you know, you have amazing, thank you.
Yes, please, thank you.
So now you have your infrastructure is like stretched to its limits. And then recently they're like, well, we'll open up an LRT that goes from Square, or it might have been Lakeshore, I think, all the way to downtown Brampton. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's fast and it's easy to get to. And then the city of Brampton was like, nah, we don't want it. The government was going to pay for it. Like, the Canadian government was going to give us money to build this. And they're like, nah, it's okay. It was crazy, man. I was like, what's wrong with you people? They're worried about the heritage of downtown Brampton being ruined. But, like, in Rome, you literally have, you know, like, streetcars next to the Colosseum that's, like, you know, hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
And what, you worried about Brampton, like, this, like, bench that's been there? Like, what's wrong with you, man?
So do you ever have the desire to leave Brampton? If you could, would you leave, and where would you go?
I mean, realistically, like, if I could, like, make millions of dollars, I'd clearly live in Toronto. That'd be sweet, but...
Would that be your city of choice if you could live?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else, really. Like, I've been to, like, Calgary. Calgary's, like, nothing's going on there. Like, when I was there for the Comic-Con, I was like, yo, I'm going to go watch a movie. And there was, like, no theaters. I couldn't find a theater. I was like, what's happening? It was crazy. And then where else have I been? I think if I wanted to retire, I'd go to Sarnia. Sarnia's pretty, like... Pretty dope.
You brought up Sarnia before, but
I love Sarnia. It's so good.
What's so good about Sarnia that makes it better than Brampton?
I don't know, man. Like, everyone's just so much happier in Sarnia. Like, I don't know what it is.
Small town life?
I guess, yeah. Like, but, like, they're also, like, really cool. Like, they're all into comics and they're all into stuff. So that's where I would retire.
Signing.
But I'd live in Toronto.
Yeah, millions of dollars. Ricky Lima would retire.
But I think I can survive living in Brampton for now, just because like it's so close to Toronto. So if I want to do that, and like people are trying to change things in Brampton, they're really trying to like make it cool. But it's not happening yet. But hopefully, I don't know. One day. We'll see.
So what kind of stuff were you in love with growing up? What was the stuff that piqued your interest that got some creative juices?
Yeah, The Simpsons is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I watched The Simpsons like all the time, every day. Like, there would be, on the weekdays, there'd be like an hour and a half block where, like, City TV would show The Simpsons, and then Omni Channel would show The Simpsons, and then another channel would show The Simpsons. So you just flip through all three and then watch them all. That was dope. And then Saturdays, they'd have like a 2-hour block of Simpsons. It was great. So I'd watch Simpsons all the time.
That was your jam.
Yeah, that was like.
Do you still watch it?
No. Well, like I'll watch the old episode.
Nothing new. Are they?
Yeah, they still make new episodes.
How many years is that now?
I think they're close to season 30, maybe. Or maybe even more. I don't know. It's crazy. Wow. Yeah.
Is that a record now? It's gotta be the record.
I think so. Yeah, they love it. And then I'd watch a lot of Dragon Ball Z growing up, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was my jam, Dragon Ball Z. Basically, any of the shows they showed on YTV's after school block.
Right.
So, like, Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, Digimon. I watched a lot of that.
What would you prefer, Digimon or Pokemon?
I think the anime, I dug Digimon more than Pokemon, but then the game was Pokemon.
Okay.
And the anime was, like, wicked for Digimon. It was, like, so cool.
I'm ignorant to this stuff. What was the difference with Digimon and Pokemon?
What? Come on. Digimon was in a digital world.
Okay.
and Pokemon was just in a regular Pokemon world.
Do you still play the games?
I do, yeah. Sun and Moon that just came out. Played the hell out of that, man.
So are you... do you have a DS for your long commute that you got to take to work?
I do, but I don't bring it because I'd rather just do nothing on the commute, you know? Actually, I play some phone games, you know, like 2048 is the numbers. I play that.
No more DS.
It's too involved, man. You just get tired by the time you get to work. And you're like, oh, man, that sucks. So
you're a big video game guy.
Yeah, that was another thing I did a lot of growing up, play video games. Basically, my TV raised me growing up, which is pretty good.
Well, your family background, tell me a little bit about it. You got siblings?
Yeah, I got two brothers and one sister. So, and they're all, like, the closest sibling to me is 7 years older than me, so, like, it was, like, a pretty big gap. So I was able to, like, I was exposed to a lot more, like, mature stuff growing up than I feel like a lot of other people. Right,
right, right. Right.
Like, I would, like, when I was, like, 8 or 9, I'd, like, stay up with my sister to watch, like, David Letterman and, like, Beavis and Butthead and, like, Jerry Springer and stuff, so...
So your, like, sense of humor was pretty savvy,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
early on.
And, like, Kids in the Hall. I was, like, way into Kids in the Hall. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Okay.
But they're, like, huge. So it would be, like, The Simpsons, Kids in the Hall, and then, like, everything else.
So did you find yourself, because of that relationship with older siblings, did you find yourself not being able to relate as much to the kids your age that you needed to be?
Yeah.
Like, your communication skills and your understanding of stuff was like ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I always felt like I was cooler than everyone.
Did everyone else feel that way?
No. Well, what sucked was like I think I felt like I was cooler than everyone else up until like high or university. So I was probably like a jerk for a while. Like, I don't know if I was a jerk. Like, I was always nice to people, but maybe like a little, I thought I was like cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when university hits, you kind of realize that, like, you know, maybe you're not as cool as you thought you were.
Like, yeah, I'm not ahead of everybody.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so that was like, there was a lot of, that was a good transition period where, you know, you realize that you're not as cool as you thought you were. Which is good, man. Like, everyone needs to realize that, right?
Be a little humble.
Because, like, yeah, like in high school, I was like really like against like alcohol and drugs and stuff. I was like, no, man, like, this is bullshit. You guys are just, like, you know,
wasting your life
and you're fucking, like, I thought it was like you're a fake enjoyment of stuff, you know. I was like, you're just doing all that, and I was probably like a jerk to a lot of people because of it. And like, I'd get like very, like, I don't know, it always bugged me. But now, like, I don't do drugs or anything, but I do drink. But now it's like I don't even care, you know what I mean? Like, people could be like smoking up right beside me and say, yo, whatever, man.
It's your business. Yeah. Whereas before you had more of like.
Yeah, I would have to like leave or I'd be like, I get upset or something. Which is like, what's wrong with you?
You know? Well, you know what? I think that's in a lot of ways admirable. You could have been a jerk to them, but you were at an age where you saw like, okay, if someone does it now, right? There's a responsibility that they have as adults. Whereas when you're a kid,
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? That this is the time for you to not waste it so that when you can.
Yeah. But you're also looking at that as an adult now. You know what?
I was in high school, like, I got along with just about every group of people.
Yeah.
And I never understood the kids who needed, like, why are we wasting, don't waste your money on cigarettes now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, don't be out there, like, missing the first. I wasn't a straight A student and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like you're starting yourself off in a direction that it's too early to do that.
True. Right? I mean, that's a pretty mature way of looking at it.
Yeah, I was kind of like you. I didn't judge them or, like, mistreat them.
I judged them.
I was pretty straight edge in high school myself. It was weird. My friend's parents, they were Rastas, so they grew their own.
Oh, like actually?
They were, yeah, oh, real Rastas, yeah.
That's crazy.
They grew their own product.
What?
Right? And it was like their religion to use it. But my friends never used it.
What?
Like we would sit.
That's crazy. Were they like from Jamaica? Like,
yeah, they were Jamaican. Oh. I grew up Jane and Finch.
Okay.
Well, wow. I went to school in that area.
Oh, man.
So like, it was weird. I could have easily had that lifestyle or if I wanted, but me and my friends, like, even my friends were kind of like, nah, let's stay focused,
like a lot of me and my friends will like go to grocery stores and buy like chips and chocolate and stuff and sit in our basement and eat the chocolate. And a lot of people are like, oh, so you guys are like high or whatever? I'm like, nah, man. I'm like, that's just like what we do, man.
We're just
like,
snacking.
Yeah, like, why don't you be high to eat snacks? Like, you don't need to be high.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and like, and then, you know, as you grow up, you kind of learn, like, I really like the Salvador Dali line where he's like, I don't need drugs, I am drugs. And I was like, oh, shit, all right. So it's like,
motto.
You know, yeah, because, like, I feel like a lot of people might, you know, like, think of, use drugs to kind of enhance things, which is fine. But if you can do that, like, on your own without, you know, like, so, yeah, that's, like, that's pretty good. It's kind of like, you know, Dragon Ball Z where Vegeta gets the Majin Buu power to surpass Goku, but it's like it's not as good as like as Goku worked for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's real. This is legit.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. It's like the guy taking steroids.
Yeah, right. So I mean you can't, it's totally different, like, you know, like the level that you can hit creatively if you work towards it or if you do this other thing. I mean, it's totally different, so you can't really compare the two, because, you know, obviously if you do like LSD or something, you're experiencing things that you would have never experienced without it, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Even if you had the best imagination in the world, there's no way you can achieve the same thing.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, I think it's Grant Morrison, who's pretty liberal with using different chemical drugs.
Yeah,
and it shows in his work.
For sure.
Right? So is he as much of a genius as everyone says, or is it...
I think being able to take those experiences and then turning them into...
Make them coherent?
Yeah, turning them into, like, a creative experience, I think that's probably where the talent lies, you know what I mean?
Right.
And is he successful all the time? Probably not.
No,
of his stuff.
I don't think so.
Like, what was the most recent one he did where it was, like, in space?
I don't know.
I forgot. It was like in space or something.
Yeah.
And that was like, I was like, what is happening? But every issue, I was like, yo, this is good, but I didn't understand what's happening, you know? And then, like, Multiversity was great, except for the first and last issue when he, like, did all the weird multiverse. I was like, what's happening? But then everything else in between, I was like, it was amazing.
You recommend it?
Yeah. Oh,
see,
it's so
good. I'm always interested, but extremely intimidated at Grant Morrison's stuff because I don't know if I'm going to get it.
I mean, yeah, it's...
And you hear people say, like, it's fantastic.
But it doesn't matter if you don't get it. You know what I mean?
Explain.
Because, like, you can just kind of experience it and then be like, all right, well, I experienced that. Now I'm done. You know, it doesn't matter if you got it or not.
I agree.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was. I think it was reading the Abnett Lanning Guardians, which isn't like extremely confusing, or even like some Jim Starlin cosmic stories.
Jim Starlin's crazy, yeah.
Right? And I love the journey of what I'm reading. And then I'm like, when someone says, why was it good? I'm like, I don't know. But I was, I had such a good time there. Yeah. Like, I just enjoyed it thoroughly.
I agree.
Yeah. I like that you brought that up. That's interesting.
I mean, that's so, and I feel like that's, a lot of people, it stops them from enjoying things because they want to understand what's happening. They want a cohesive story, and it's like, maybe you're not going to get one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, who cares? Just enjoy what's happening right now.
Yeah, and have you ever read Dan Slott's Silver Surfer?
The one with the girl.
Yeah. Have you ever read it? That was one of those things where sometimes I wasn't completely 100% sure, but when I did get it, I had those emotional moments. I'm like, this is like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah,
but it was that journey with them that was so much fun.
I really liked it. Yeah, I think Dan Slott kind of leaned on the relationship a little too hard sometimes, and I was like, all right, I get it. He's like with this girl, whatever. And it was such like an idealized version of a relationship, you know? Like, there was never any like problems. Like, there was a problem where she's like, oh, you didn't tell me you killed a bunch of people. And he's like, oh, sorry. And then that was it, you know? And then he saves her, and she's like, I forgive you. And it's like, all right, well, wait.
But I think that's also the tone of that book. Like, it's kind of
that's
long,
true, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's so
it's like
open.
Campy and...
You
know,
a little bit.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a good series. So when you reference like people having to sort of use a substance to, you know, spark their creativity, if you're ever hit a moment of lacking creativity, where does it come from? Where do you grab that energy from?
Man, I don't know. I think music really helps. Like, I listen to a lot of music when I write, and that helps with a lot of stuff. Like with Deep Sea, it's a very like it's a dark and like sad story kind of thing. So I would listen to a lot of like happy pop music. So it seems a little weird, but there's the idea of like catharsis, where it's like when you say you like watch something that's like really sad, and then that you experience that emotion through the media.
Yeah.
So then that cleanses you of that emotion, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So if you watch like a sad movie and you cry, and then by the end you're relieved because now you've just relieved yourself of any sad emotions you have inside of you. So if you listen to happy pop music, all of a sudden now you're relieving yourself of the happy pop music or happy moments inside of you, and now you can write like the sad and depressing stuff. So
that's a
point. Yeah.
So what kind of music do you like?
Oh man, I listen to everything, man. Like literally everything.
I usually hate when people say that because it's because in my experience is people not telling you what they listen
well,
to.
Well, they'll like be
but
like
I'm interested in what I feel like
well,
you've really got
like,
good
oh,
answers.
Listen to like the radio, and you're like the radio. Yeah, I like pull up my my music list here.
Only because the fact that you specifically said that when you're writing, you listen to a specific music.
Yeah.
So I can tell that you've got, like, distinct
so,
taste, right?
Yeah, so, like, with Deep Sea was pop music with Black Hole Hunters Club because I wanted to be, like, you know, like, badass and action-y. I'd listen to a lot of, like death metal just because it's, like, that's like, the mood. Alright, well, here we got Man's Not Hot by Big Shaq. It's like he's like a UK grime artist who's actually a comedian. It's
okay.
Like a funny song. This song here is XXXTentacion. this guy was like big on SoundCloud and stuff. And then it turned out he like abused this woman, and now it's like it's hard to listen to the song because it's like, alright, because the things he talks about, it's like aggressive rap,
right?
And then you're like, okay, well, what he's talking about, obviously he's living that life. So it's like, do you want to support something like that?
It's a tough
situation. I don't know. I mean, the in terms of just musicality, it's like it gets you into the mood, but in terms of the message,
it kind of
And we got Fall Out Boy, literally only one song, Sugar, We're Going Down.
Okay.
Jaden Smith's Batman. That's a good track. This song's so good.
Okay.
It's weird because it's almost like he has reinvented Batman in this song and has created a different character. So if you watch, there's a video to it too. And it's almost as if Bruce Wayne is like a strung out millennial who's like sick of being Batman, like he doesn't want to be Batman anymore, and he's just so annoyed that people need his help all the time. But I guess he's got like this sense of duty, okay. And it's really cool because the Batmobile is like, I think it's like a Jeep or something, but then it's got those suicide doors that go up,
yeah.
And then he drives with them open, so it looks like a bat driving. Yeah, that was like, it's so cool. But a lot of people don't like it, so I don't know. Tragically Hip, obviously. Okay, this guy Joji. I don't know if you're familiar with YouTube, but Filthy Frank.
Don't know it.
He's a YouTuber who would like, he'd make some of the like most extreme videos. Like the one video I keep on referencing is they made a cake with hair.
That like, sounds disgusting.
Yeah, and they made this cake full of hair, and then they started eating it, and then like so then the last like 5 minutes of the video is just them trying to eat this cake and like puking and stuff.
Oh, that's
it's terrible. It's
yeah,
the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
But he makes like really good music too. So,
but it inspires you.
Yeah, yeah, that one's pretty good. Let's see. Igloo Ghost. This one's like a, I think it's like a, I don't even know. It's like a, I don't know. It's just electronic music, I guess. But this band is really, this inspires me like a lot. Black Moss Super Rainbow. They're like a folk kind of electronic band. So they use a lot of acoustic instruments, but also electronic instruments. And then the voice is all vocorded through like his keyboard. So it's like not even a real voice. That shit's wicked. You gotta listen to that. And that's one of those bands where like you feel like you're on drugs, but you're not. And what's cool is like, well, I mean, it's not like cool or anything, but the artist, he doesn't do drugs either, and so that all kind of just comes from him, you know what I mean?
He's just a weirdo.
Yeah, he's just a weirdo. And that's the best. I like those people who are just weirdos.
So do you the music choices that you have, are they where do you find them from? Like, where do you get your music influence from?
Right now, I'm like subscribed to Google Music, so okay. It would like literally recommend new bands and stuff.
Okay.
So I listen to a lot of stuff through that, but also just kind of like looking up stuff, seeing what other people are listening to, and asking people what they're listening to.
Do you have more of an indie ear? Like you don't necessarily want what's everybody else knows, you want to find your music yourself?
I mean, yeah, I like finding music like that, but at the same time, too, like, I'm not opposed to listening to, like, top 40 stuff. Especially nowadays, I think top 40 music now is better than it's ever been.
Really?
Yeah, man, it's so good.
Why do you say that?
I don't know, it's just, musically, though, I'm not talking about lyrically. Musically, it's just, like, it's so, maybe it's just relates to my aesthetic, maybe
okay.
That's all it is, but I just feel like I can relate to the music now more than I could have, you know, back in the early 2000s and stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm finding I'm getting to the point with music where I hate saying it, but like the stuff that I once listened to,
yeah.
And like when I grew up being a big hip hop fan, and now today, like, I can't listen to what the kids like.
What? Really?
You know, like, okay. It's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, that's not, you know, I'm starting to sound like
old,
the
man.
Old. Yeah. And I don't know if it's me being old and not just understanding, or if it's just liking what you like. You know, I'm a bit of a nostalgic person, so I'm kind of, I get connected to
the
music I like. It reminds me of a time.
Yeah, that might be it.
You know, I don't know. But that's cool that you still are able to find new stuff.
Yeah, I think it's really good, and I never want to, like, be that guy who's like, I don't understand what's going on anymore. Like, what happened in the world? Like, I always want to keep up with, like, what's going on. But at the same time, too, at certain points, you need to realize that this isn't for you anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And I think, and it hits that sometimes. Like, I've talked to people who are, like, 23, and it's just a whole other world, man. I'm like, what? Like, sometimes I don't understand, like, where you're coming from. And
I think our generation is the, like, people that were born mid-90s and later, there's going to be things where it's just such a shock for us to talk to them.
Yeah.
Not because we're suddenly so much older, but, like, people who were born 80s to late 80s, they got to see such a transition in media and how movies are played and how information and content is distributed, where you remember a tape. and the value of a tape, right? The, what was cool about it. And a CD or a record or whatever. But now it's so much instant gratification that people just can't comprehend when you'd be like, you don't really, you know, you don't really appreciate it.
It sounds
like old and like that grumpy old person. But there's a certain thing, like when you were a kid, you said watching TV or playing video games, you earned your Simpsons card. Do you know what I mean? Like, you didn't have YouTube to pull it up. You watched it in that hour and a half block. You knew when it was on, and I watched those episodes with the commercials. You know what I mean?
Commercials are the worst part.
Yeah. Whereas now, people, like, you talk to some people, and they have all this information already because it's just at their fingertip. And it's like, you didn't dig for that album. You didn't, you know, you didn't dig for that TV show.
Yeah, like back in the Napster days where you would download a song and then it would be totally mislabeled and you had no idea who made the song. And you'd be like, what is happening? And then you can never find that song again.
Yeah.
You're like, where is this track?
Or downloading that Napster song and it taking a half an hour.
Yeah, or like someone picks up the phone.
And it was ruined.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, there's a bit of an earning of it. So you were attached to it a little bit differently.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if it's because of that, but I think that nowadays there's a different sense of like what is honesty as opposed to what is not. Like, I feel like if you're honest with someone, sometimes they're like, whoa, like, why are you not, like, you know, they almost take it as like
shocking.
Either you're being sarcastic or you're, and it's like, yo, I'm just being honest, man, like, just accept it. But I don't know, man, I feel like it's weird. But going back, you're talking about like doing, like, using substances to create stuff. When I was in Calgary, I was, like, by myself, and I was like, you know what? I've never written while I was drunk, so I'm going to, like, get drunk on purpose and write. So I, like, bought a bunch of beers, brought it back to my room, and I, like, chugged one of them. I was like, yeah, this is going to be good, man. And then I started drinking the other one, and then I don't know what it was. Like, I always thought that beer is supposed to make you, like, more chill, but, like, my heart started, like, going crazy. I was like sweating like crazy. I was like, oh my God, I think I'm gonna die. Like, I don't know what it was, but like chugging that beer just like messed me up. So I like couldn't function. And I was like so worried I was gonna die in Calgary that I was like, oh my God. So I tried writing a little bit, but I couldn't. And then I was just like, I gotta sleep. So I was like, I went to sleep, but my heart was still like going crazy. I was like, what is happening?
So you never did it. That didn't work out.
No, that didn't work out, man.
I remember, sometimes you get some of your most creative thoughts with, they say, extreme fatigue can do it.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, I never think of, I know it is, but I never think of beer as a mind alterer, even though it technically
it is.
But, like, when I think of, like, I think of, like, those drugs or, like, weed where you start to, like, you suddenly think of things. Not, I've never experienced it myself because I never actually smoked weed. But you start to think of things that you wouldn't normally think about. But, I guess beer would do that, too. I just, I feel like it would make you more groggy.
Well, a lot of writers are like, yo, they wrote drunk and then, you know, Ernest Hemingway was, like, constantly drunk and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, yo, maybe it worked. But
I guess it makes you more free.
Yeah.
It liberates you.
Yeah, less inhibitions. But, yo, it didn't work for me, man.
Just got the heart going.
I was literally going to die. It was crazy. I didn't know what was happening. I was like, yo, what? I was so confused.
That's hilarious. So, okay, you were a big Simpsons fan, big video game fan.
Yeah.
What was your favorite video game growing up? We're not following the script. This is all over the place. This is just straight conversation.
My favorite video game growing up, probably like The Legend of Zelda, The Ocarina of Time. I played that game a lot of times, and it was like, I still remember like the Christmas I got it. I was like, yo, this is wicked. And then I'm like playing it, and then there's that part where you're in the Deku tree and you have to light the stick on fire to light the web on fire so you can get through. And I was like, you could do that in a video game? That like blew my mind. I was like, what? I didn't know you could do that. So that was like, that game was like, oh man, that was like the best.
Confession, I didn't play that game until I was like 28 years old, right? I bought it on
you got it on the DS?
3DS.
Oh, man.
Had a young friend of mine recommend it. So I said, all right, I trust you. You're a big video game guy. I'm going to play this game. And it was the greatest game I played. Even though it was from the 90s and they had upgraded and it looked great, what you just said I thought to myself, if I was a parent, I wouldn't get my kid an iPad. I'd get them this game because you're constantly thinking and having to pay attention. It's not just like it's not just like I gotta kill the monster or like even when you play Mario, you go across the screen and there's a definite goal. This is like I gotta listen to the music being played. I gotta follow the pattern. And it's like it's like a brain teaser as you're playing, and it's a fantastic story.
Well, the new Breath of the Wild, the Zelda game, that one's pretty much like that to like the next level, because that they don't even give you a goal. They kind of just say, well, here's the world, and you're like, oh my god, what do
just,
I do?
Just go.
You just do it, whatever you gotta do, and you like discover things and find things. So
Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask?
Ocarina of Time for sure. Majora's Mask is too like, there's only like 4 dungeons in that game. It's lame.
Yeah?
Yeah, man, it's lame. I mean, it's good. I like the aesthetic of it, and it's, like, cool. But, yeah, Ocarina of Time is, like, way better. Like, hands down.
Did you read any of the comic adaptations of Ocarina of Time?
Nah. I just never...
You're a master already. I don't need to read it. How it goes. Got it.
But nowadays, I think my favorite game now is this game called Binding of Isaac. And it's like a roguelike, which is dangerous, because roguelikes are they're different every time you play them. It's all, like, procedurally generated. So you can play a game, like, 200 hours, and it's, like, different every single time. And that's pretty dangerous. When I didn't have a job, that's all I did was play Binding of Isaac. Watch out for that game.
What system is that on?
It's on pretty much all of them. It's on PS4 and PC. And
Binding of Isaac?
Yeah, it just came out on Switch. So, like, I don't know if you know the story of Isaac in the Bible where Abraham is told by an angel to kill his son.
Uh-huh.
So in the game, your mom is, like, you know, goes crazy and then hears God tell her to kill Isaac, which is you. So then you escape your mom and jump into the basement to, like, avoid
your mom named Sarah?
They never named them all.
Okay.
So you go in the basement, and then your basement's full of all these monsters. So you use your tears to kill the monsters, and then you get power-ups throughout the levels and stuff. And then eventually you fight your mom, and then you go inside and fight her the heart inside of her. And then you can go to heaven or hell and fight angels or demons.
That's intense.
Yeah, you know, this game's crazy, man.
That's intense.
Yeah, this game's nuts.
Okay, so we got The Simpsons. We got video games, Ocarina of Time. How did you get into discovering comic books?
Well, my brother got caught up in the 90s fad, where he was, like, collecting all the number ones and the Image comics and all those, like, gimmick covers and shit. And he would put them on his wall, I guess because he's like, yo, these are worth lots of money, man. Like, these are going to be worth so much money. And then, so I would be like, yo, look at these comics. These are so cool. So, like, he was a big fan of Lobo, and he had this, like, wicked Lobo poster that it's, like, Lobo with, like, 2 guns, and there's, like, bullets flying everywhere. And what's really cool is, like, I think I'm pretty happy with this. So, in the Black Hole Hunters Could Help Biggest Thing Ever, I referenced that scene right here, where it's, like, very similar, where, like, she shows off these guns. So that's,
she,
like,
she totally paid a little homage to your brother.
Yeah, right? So, like, here's where she's, like, shooting all the bullets and stuff. That's, like, came straight out of that Lobo poster. So I was into that. And then, like, obviously, like, the 90s cartoons, like, the X-Men cartoons and Spider-Man. And, well, those are the 2 biggest ones. There's a Silver Surfer one, but it sucked.
Yeah, it's on Netflix now. I love the Spider-Man cartoon because it was, like, I'm not saying no other cartoons were like it. Because I watch Batman the Animated Series still, and it holds up as one of the best cartoons, but Spider-Man was ongoing, like it was serialized. You know, the story was continuing even when the arc changed. Everything that happened to Peter's relationships counted, and exactly. I was like, I can't miss this. I never finished that series.
No,
you know that?
Oh, dude, gotta finish it.
Now it's on. I can't sit through it anymore. I don't have the patience like I once did because I don't know what it is. But I would watch it always up to a certain point. And I never...
You don't want it to end. So you're like, I'm done.
But I never saw, like, it would always... From where it went to, it would always revert back to the first episodes. It never continued. Like, what happens next? Yeah. Right? I kept getting to that point of Madame Web, and I never figured out what she wanted. It was driving me crazy.
Was that after, like, the planet stuff, the Secret Wars stuff?
I never got to the Secret Wars stuff.
Oh, dude, what the hell, man?
I know. I'm watching it now. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good one. For some reason, it always stands out to me in that series how bulky Peter is. He's like
That's true.
Whereas, like, every other Peter Parker, he's a very lean and very like spidery. But in this one, he's so stiff and like boxy.
Yeah.
For some, even as a kid, I was like, yo, why is he so, like, he's basically a box.
You know? Yeah, he was. I didn't really like the his civilian clothes.
Yeah, he's civilian clothes.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So, what was the first thing you collected that you were like, what's your go-to book?
My brother would give me some books, so I had like a big collection of like books that he gave me. So, like Maximum Carnage, he gave me, which is probably stupid on his part because like those books are pretty good, man. And like I imagine they're worth maybe not a lot, but worth more than some of the other books he had. You know what I mean? So it's like,
Maximum Carnage holds up for you.
He shouldn't have gave me this.
Some people are like, oh, it's such a dumb story.
No, I think Maximum Carnage is great.
Yeah?
Yeah, because like there's a whole idea of just like chaos for chaos' sake. And I think recently I've been getting into this like, there's this punk artist named Gigi Allen who would like, his concerts, he'd like literally just like throw shit at people. Like, it was just like anarchy. Like, he'd just fight his audience, throw shit at people. Like, it was nuts. But so I was following what he was doing, but then I read Maximum Carnage again, and I was like, I could see, like, you know, Cletus Cassidy's almost like, you know, what Gigi Allen did, where it's just no rules and everything was just crazy. And I was like, yo, I'm into that. And then obviously, like, you know, Captain America shows up and everything's saved, but
yeah.
I mean, whatever. And as a kid, I never finished that series because I never had the rest of the issues. So I never knew Captain America was even in it until I got the trade. And I was like, holy shit, Captain America's in this? It was crazy.
It was a fun time. Like, to be a kid and have those books be coming out, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because it was just such a synergy of, like, all these characters in each other's worlds and everything was getting... It just seemed like every character needed to be broken and then resurrected during those days. It was fun.
Yeah, like Kraven, The Last Hunt. Oh my god, that was crazy. That book's nuts. Like, it's crazy. Like, especially when Kraven like kills himself at the end. Like, spoiler alert. But I was like, yo, what? They did this in a comic?
I know, right? It's crazy. But JM, I don't know how to say his name, Dematteis, Dematteis, he writes the best deaths in comics. I don't know if you remember, he wrote the death of Dr. Octopus. He wrote the death of Aunt May, which was a fantastic issue, Amazing Spider-Man 400, and they all get retconned. It kind of became his trope where he would kill off characters, but he did it in such a memorable way. I mean, if they let him keep writing Spider-Man, he would have been left with nobody because he just killed everyone. But he did it in such a like a memorable way. Like, the death of Aunt May was done so well that it actually like pulled the heartstrings. But they retconned it afterwards, after the clone saga or whatever it was, that she was just a clone herself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, it sucked. But, so you said before that you had gone to school. You're kind of like judging the kids in high school.
Yeah,
but then you went to university. What did you go to university for?
I did English literature. Originally, I was like, yo, I'm going to go for, like, journalism at Carleton in Ottawa. And then I don't know why I didn't do it. I'm kind of glad I didn't, because journalism nowadays is, like, it's a nightmare, man. Like, the things you have to go through to be a journalist is crazy.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm all right.
I think I'm okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
I was like, you know, I'm glad I didn't do it, but... So I did English at York University, which is like, it was pretty safe. I didn't have to move out. I could have just stayed at home, saved money. So that was pretty good. Only thing I regretted about that was like, I didn't get involved in the school more. I would just like go to school and come home.
Okay.
But then my last year I did like stuff and that was great. But before that I didn't, which is like lame.
You just did the straightforward, go to school, do your work, come home.
Yeah, yeah. So
right.
Maybe I thought I was better than everyone, I don't know. So, yeah, that's what I did. And then when I graduated, I started doing video game journalism at this website called Toronto Thumbs. It doesn't exist anymore, but that's what I did. So that was like 2011 to about 2013 I did that, maybe 2014. And that was really fun. I met a lot of people and did a lot of cool stuff. Gave a lot of like free games, and then you like had a review and stuff, and that was cool.
That would, again, I was saying to you before, dream jobs. I wanted to be a music journalist where I would just be able to review and you know, give commentary on albums. That would have been my dream.
There you go. But you can still do that, man.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it now for free, but like, no one's going to be giving. I mean, I guess if you sign up to Apple Music, you could just listen to these albums, but you know, to receive something before it comes out to like get a listening party, like that would have been my dream. Yeah. I wrote for the school newspaper and kind of did that.
Oh yeah.
But reviewing video games, what was that like? Being a fan of video games.
I mean, it was cool, like going to the events. A lot of PR companies would throw events, and like you'd go and get free beer and like little hamburger sliders, which is great.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, this is great.
This is the life.
And then, and then you'd like write a review, you'd be like, yo, this game is so good, man. Like, because you're like drinking and it's so loud. And you're like, yeah, man, this game's amazing. And then the game comes out and you play it and you're like, it's not that great. But you know, they tricked you, man. They tricked you. So that was good. It sucks though, like playing a game with the eye of reviewing it, because then kind of like you don't get to enjoy it as much. You get very critical of the game, so yeah, that kind of sucks. And I didn't enjoy like all that aspect of it, but I loved like going to the events and doing all that stuff.
That's great. Yeah. I always wondered that, if it would, something that you love to do, if all of a sudden you have to do it as a job, and then like, I can't just enjoy, even though I know it's not great, I have to be honest about like its quality.
You kind of become like an advertising machine, because you're like, well, I want to keep getting all this stuff, just so that the site can continue. So you got to almost help them promote their things and be not very critical of what they're doing.
Right.
Or else maybe you won't get it.
Who are you
going
to offend?
Yeah, right? So you kind of have to just be like, look at this. This is amazing. Look at that. This is great, too. And it's like, oh, man. So you just become kind of like another leg of promotion and, like, marketing. But, you know, I mean, that's cool, too. Some people like that.
So how long did that last for?
Until about maybe 2013 or 14, when I started doing comics more, and then I just started doing comics.
So tell me about that transition into comics. What made you finally get the, not the nerve, but like, I want to do this.
I wrote a bunch of like scripts back in like 2010, maybe even 2009 while I was in school still. And I was just writing scripts, almost like plays. So it wasn't really broken up into panels and stuff. But I was like, yeah, I want to write comics and stuff. So I was doing that, and I found, like, an artist, and he, like, flaked out, which is, like, whatever. And the scripts were all weird, so, like, the script put more work onto the artist, because then they had to break it down and, like, work out panels and stuff. So that really sucked, like, on my part. And
so you didn't know yet how
I didn't quite understand.
Structure or given... Yeah.
So I was, like, working on a lot of weird stuff. And then 2012, I met David Bishop at a Wizard World in Canada, back when they used to do Wizard Worlds. And
When was the last time they did that? Sorry.
Probably 2012. I think that was the last year.
Were those shows any good?
No. Okay. I don't think we made any money.
Okay.
Well, I was there with Stadium Comics. So okay. I started working at Stadium in 2011. So
where were they held, those conventions?
I think it was just... Yeah, I don't even remember. I don't know. It wasn't the main convention center where the Fan Expo is.
Was that an exhibition stadium? Or like a round exhibition?
Yeah, maybe. I can't remember.
Okay. I never went to one of those shows.
Yeah, so I was there with Stadium, and then they sat right beside David Bishop, and I met him there. And then David, like, I knew he was an artist, and I was like, yo, I want to write a comic. So I approached him with like an 8-page story. Well, he posted a picture of Superman done in blue and red pen. And I was like, yo, it'd be cool if we made a comic in blue and red pen.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, we could do that. So then, just out of sheer, like, I didn't want to take up a lot of his time, I just wrote, like, an 8-page story. And I was like, yo, you want to draw that? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we did that 8 pages. The first 8 pages in Deep Sea was, like, the first thing I ever did. And
you wrote that weekend? or you had something prepared?
No, I wrote it maybe like after I saw that Superman picture.
Okay.
So we were trying to think of like things that would be blue and red, so we were thinking of like blood and water. So like,
you know. Okay.
And then, so I wrote that, and then we released it for Halloween Comic Fest in 2012. Yeah, so October 2012, which like just passed, like,
right,
5-year anniversary, I guess.
Wow.
And so then when we released that, we sold about 100 issues or 100 copies in that one day. And I was like, yo, what? This is crazy. Like, people obviously like this book. So then I was like, David, we need to make a longer one. And he's like, all right, sure. So that's when I started working on the graphic novels, like literally that night. But then it didn't come out until 2014. So, I mean, it took like 2 years to make. But
it's so much harder for you guys who still have your day jobs, who are creators, right? To make that dedicated time to put these things together. You're not just making comics. You wake up and make comics. You know what I mean? So
in fairness, that's true.
It's pretty impressive that you're still doing all these other things in your day-to-day life, and then you come out with a graphic novel like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard, and it takes a balancing act, especially, like, David's got, like, kids and a family, so it's like, you know, he's got to balance that, too. But,
exactly.
I mean, but that, I think that's what separates the people who do it from the people who don't, is that drive to do it even in spite of
everything
else.
Yeah, you know? So even doing something as simple as like this is a podcast, it's just sitting and talking, but finding the time to do it and then edit it and then
you could be home with your wife like having a good time instead you're here fucking talking to me, right? Like,
I'm having a good time.
I don't know, man. I bet you could probably have a better time with your wife.
I love all the time I spend with my wife, but we're having a good time. Shout out to my wife Lady J if she's listening. So you did the Deep Sea.
Yeah.
And that was your first 8-page book.
Yeah.
And then you moved on to Black Hole Hunters Club.
Yeah, so I met Shane at that event that we released Deep Sea at. And I'd imagine Shane saw us selling 100 copies. He's like, yo, what's up with this guy? But so then we did that. And then in January of 2013, there's a 24-hour comic jam. So you had to make a 24-page book in 24 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was crazy. And so I didn't draw, so I just got a bunch of magazines and cut them up. And at the jam, I was, like, making a collage comic.
Okay, that's cool.
And then me and Shane, like, talked and stuff there. And he's like, yo, you want to, like, do another book or do work on something? So I wrote a script. He showed me some characters he was working on, which were the bug characters from Black Hole Hunters Club. And then so then I wrote a script based on that. And then in March, there's a 12-hour comic jam, which is basically the same thing as a 24-hour one, but
just 12 pages? Yeah. Okay.
So then that's why the first issue is only 12 pages, because we did it for that. And then we released it for the Free Comic Book Day in May of that year, and we sold about like 80 to 90 copies of that. And I was like, yo, man, this comic thing, this is crazy. Hey, yeah. So that's kind of what really pushed me. And then, so then me and Shane were like, well, let's just keep on making Black Hole Hunters Club, so... We just kept making them.
What's that collaboration like with you and Shane?
Yeah,
Describe it a little bit.
So basically, I'll write a script. Like, we'll talk about the overall story arc and, like, what happens and that whole thing. And then I'll go off, write a script, give it to him, and then he won't talk to me for another, like, month to 2 months. And then it'll be done. And it's great. And then most of the time, it's completely different than what I wrote. But that's fine, you know? Like, I don't...
I was told it's important for me to ask you, how do you feel about how he changes the script?
I'm totally into it, man. Like, I love collaboration. Like, that's my biggest thing. Like, I was telling you about Brand Jam, what we do in Brampton, where it's like a comic jam where, you know, one person draws a panel and passes it on, another person draws a panel, and then by the end, you got, like, this, like, weird comic that everyone's
contributing. It's like a broken telephone type
of thing? Yeah, well, no, not really, because there's not, like, one message, you know what I mean?
One person
will draw a panel, and then another person
passing
will take
the baton.
It, yeah, take it in a completely different direction. Usually there's, like, explosions or poop or something, but, I mean, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so, like, Shane's changes I'm totally into. Like, when Shane changes something, it will give me new ideas for later. You know what I mean? And as long as, like, as long as it's still good, I mean, I don't care, right? Like, people thought I did that.
Yeah, right, right, right. Because you're credited as the writer. Yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes we do, like, it's weird. We'll fight about, like, stupid stuff, like, you know, a person's name that doesn't really matter. But when it comes to, like, big stuff, it's like, yeah, we're usually on board with, like, everything, right? And I usually talk about it in terms of, like, you know, the original Star Wars versus the prequels, where George Lucas had all the freedom in the world of the prequels, and you see how that turned out, right? He didn't have to collaborate with anybody.
Right.
He was, like, the main voice, and that turned out, like, kind of weird. Even though I liked the prequels, but whatever. And then with the originals, you know, he had different directors, he had, like, a whole studio behind it and stuff, and you got something that was pretty good.
Writers, yeah. Right? People who are giving input.
Exactly. So you got something pretty good from that, right?
Yeah. I think if you have a good brain trust where the person you're working with, you trust their input, they usually help make it better.
But why are you going to work with someone if you don't trust them? You know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, especially in comics, like, I work with an artist because I like what they do. I'm not going to work with an artist I don't like. You know what I mean?
So what was it about Shane's art that drew you to it?
I don't know. It's just good. There's, like, I guess a lot of energy to it, which I like. You know what I mean? And, like, a lot of people, when they pick up the book, they're like, whoa, wow, look at it. Like, everyone's just impressed with the energy, right? So I think that's what drew me to it. And also, too, like, he was interested in doing it. So I was like, yeah, man, let's do it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, I was like, well, I don't know, your anatomy could be a little bit better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was just keen to do stuff. And it just it worked out that he was awesome. You know what I mean? It could have been, you know, he could have been crap. And
he's an easy guy to get along with.
Yeah, for sure.
For the most part.
And I think we have, like, the same values, right? Like, we appreciate the same kind of things, you know?
Right. I'm trying to subliminally tease him. He's the easiest guy, one of the easiest guys I've met and get along with, but I said for the most part. Shane, if you're listening, what's going on, buddy? He told me I need to ask you about the critical acclaim you received for Black Hole Hunters Club from Eric Larson.
Oh man!
Tell me that story.
Oh my god, Eric Larson, dude. Yeah, there's like so much history with Larson. So we, oh man, what was it? It was like before we had the trade coming out. I think we were gonna ask Eric Larson to do a cover.
Oh really?
Yeah. So Shane emailed him. He's like, "Yo, man, you want to do a cover?" And he's like, "I neither have the time nor inclination to do this." He just signed an E. He didn't sign his name. I was like, "All right, well, that's amazing." Like, I wanted to put that on the book, like a quote from Eric Larson. Just said, "I neither have the time nor inclination."
Yeah, your review.
Yeah, right.
Your cover quote from Adam Gorham says too much swearing. Like, that would have been great to have right beside Eric Larson. Like, I have no inclination.
Yeah, right? That would have been sweet. So then, yo, the saga's not done at that point. So then, like, 3 years later, Fan Expo this year, I see Eric Larson at his table, and he's just, it's like Sunday night, he's just chilling, like, getting his table all, like, he's, like, putting away all his stuff. And I was like, "Hey, man, I really like your stuff." He's like, "Oh, thanks." And I'm like, "Yo, is it cool if I give you my book?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." So I go back, I get my book, I get that Black Hole Hunters Club Volume 1, and I give it to him. He's like, "Thanks, man, I appreciate it." I'm like, "Cool, man, cool." So then I go home.
Were you an Eric Larson fan growing up?
Not really. Like, okay, I read some Savage Dragon, but not, like, a whole lot.
Okay.
So then
Did you know Savage Dragon? Sorry, segue. He moved to Toronto?
Yeah. You were
at the comic
thing.
Shop. Yeah.
Which, whatever. But so then I think it was the Monday or the Tuesday after Fan Expo, I emailed him because I realized I didn't give him any of my information. And I was like, well, what if he wanted to, like, contact me? Because it's so dope. You know, the comics are best. So I emailed him. I'm like, "Yo, man, thanks for checking out my book. This is my contact information. If you dig it, let me know what you think." And then I didn't think much of it. And then my friend, he gave Eric Larson a book as well, right? So, but then my friend on Facebook, he posted, he's like, "Yo, Eric Larson went on this Twitter rant about people giving him his book and, like, asking for, like, all this information."
Really?
I was like, "Yo, what?" So I was reading it, and then people were like, "Yeah, man, like, he was, like, saying how, you know, your book is like a puppy, don't put that puppy on me, and I have no responsibility towards your book, and I don't have to give you feedback and stuff." So I'm pretty sure he got my email, and that triggered him to, like, do this, like, Twitter post about, like, books and stuff. And I was like, "Yo, what? That's crazy." So I think, And I think I upset Eric Larson with Black Lentis Club. I don't know.
If you saw Eric Larson again, what would you say to him?
Yeah, he probably doesn't even remember me. I'd just be like, what's up, Eric Larson?
You should give him... Give him another
copy.
Could you like to read my book, Deep Sea? Or Ever After?
And I mean, like, you know, I think that's a fair thing. Like, I bet he's inundated with so many books at every show, you know, and people just give him stuff. Which is fine, but I mean, I don't know. Do you have to go on a rant on Twitter about it? Like, maybe you don't, but maybe you do, you know? Because then other people learn what's acceptable, right? So, I don't know. I didn't think I was crossing any lines by emailing them with my information, but whatever. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Do you think with this, like, speaking of Twitter rants, and you're on social media, naturally, right? Yeah. How do you feel when people, like, use their social media status to be so opinionated? Do you find it to be... Do you prefer using it as an exchange of, like, hey, this is great?
Yeah.
Or, I got something to say.
No, because if you say everything's great, then no one will take you seriously, right? Like, you need to be, like, a well-rounded person. I mean, you obviously have opinions on something. Let people know about that. But I think it's about... It comes down to, like, is your opinion, like, well-supported with facts? Oh, jeez.
Not my fault.
Like, is your opinion, like, well-supported with facts? And if it is, then that's fine. Like, but if you're just saying random shit that is unfactual and wrong, then, I mean, obviously, like, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
But then if it's just your opinion, that's fine, too. You know what I mean? But you make it known that it's your opinion, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I go on these things now, naturally, for, like, the networking of stuff and sharing ideas. But then sometimes you just got people who are... It's like they're soapbox all the time.
Yeah.
You know? So I guess it was his opportunity, Eric Larson's opportunity, to be like, I don't... Your book is my response.
I think that's great, because then people learn what is socially acceptable in terms of giving someone their comic, right? Like, you know, now he probably doesn't have to... Well, I mean, obviously he'll still get that all the time. But now it's like people who follow him on Twitter will know that maybe that's not the best thing to do.
For him.
Yeah.
To him.
So if I had read that before I gave him my book, maybe I would have been like, all right, well, here's my book later. And not have emailed him. I really feel like if that Twitter rant was based on my email, like, who knows? Like, it could have been something else.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't know who I am.
I get... You know what? I guess... Initially, when someone... If I was being flooded with people's books to read...
Yeah.
Maybe it would be overwhelming, but I think it's a pretty sweet spot to be in where people value your opinion, too.
I mean, yeah, right? But then if you're just getting books every 5 seconds, then, you know...
But it's not for... But not every day you get a book from Ricky Lima.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't know yet.
He doesn't know what's going on. All right. So, you went to school again... Right?
Yeah, this summer.
Recently. What did you go to school for this summer?
This summer I went to school for book publishing. It was called Creative Book Publishing.
Where did that passion come from?
It came from comics. I was making comics for 5 years, and I was like... So in 2016, I lost my job, and I was like, well, I could just sit here doing nothing for the rest
of my
life.
Where were you working?
Before that, I was working at a mobile game studio in Toronto.
Okay.
So I was, like, doing QA testing. That was pretty dope. It was, like, you know, testing video games. It was like a mobile game, so it wasn't, like, you know, like, breaking any records here. But it was all right. The company was cool. I really liked the environment that I was in. But it was, like, a contract thing. They didn't extend my contract. So then I didn't have a job. And I was like, fuck. So then I was like, well, what do I do? And I really felt like my skills weren't, like, up to date. So then I was looking at what I could do, and I was like, well, I really like making comics. So then I started looking into what I could do in terms of, like, that, and then it just kind of went into publishing. So I originally went to Humber for book publishing just to increase my comics output and, like, my knowledge of doing all that. But then through that, I learned that there's, like, a whole other world of, like, you know, prose writing and stuff, and, like, novels, which, I mean, obviously I knew about, but I wasn't, like, into it. So then learning all that, now I'm, like, know all this stuff in both worlds, so that's pretty cool. Now I'm working at, you know, an internship at a book publisher here in Toronto, so it's pretty dope.
So what's the end goal for you in regards to the experience of like going to school to learn about publishing and now working at the internship? Like, where do you see
Well, my end goal is to make money to support myself. So whatever that means, I mean, I don't know. It's tough, right? Because nowadays everything is so uncertain, you know what I mean? Like, you can work at a job for 5 years and then not work there anymore, right? Just drop the hat. So I think my end goal is to like work in publishing somehow, doing something that is related to publishing and hopefully comic related. That'd be really cool. I'd like to do like comics, like working at one of the like IDW or Image or something, but who knows.
So give me a gem that you learned from the publishing course that you took.
Yeah.
In regards to like, my question is too, nowadays, how much has publishing been affected by digital content being used?
Yeah, for a while, digital was taking over print, and like everything was kind of like, oh my god, what's happening? But nowadays, digital's kind of plateaued. I feel like it's found its audience.
Okay.
And so now those people are reading digital, and everyone else is reading print. And so print is kind of back in front, whereas digital is kind of just staggering where it is. So
print in regards to books or like magazines? And
magazines are like, they're dead.
Okay. Well,
no, that's a lie. I can't say they're dead, because people still read magazines.
People do, but I mean...
I feel like the internet has taken over because it's more immediate, more like...
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes
there,
you buy a magazine because you wanted that interview or that feature,
exactly.
Right?
But they just post it online.
That's
and
what I mean,
that.
Right?
Right? Whereas like a book is a little bit different because like, you know...
It's a whole package.
It's the whole thing, right?
Do you do you like reading a tactile book or do you like digital? What do you prefer?
It's different. Like, when it comes to comics, I probably want to read digital just because I don't want to ruin my books. Like, I'm one of those guys. Like, yo, don't touch the book. So I read those digitally, even though I'm like, you know. But when it comes to like novels and stuff, I really like being able to like hold the book and, you know, feel the paper. Like, where I work right now, Coach House, they print their own book. And they get paper specially made for them in Quebec. So it's like this like sweet ass like paper.
Is it Quebec core?
No. It's like something, I don't know.
Okay.
So they use like this like dope ass paper. So when you read one of their books, it's like, yo, this is nice. You know what I mean? So it's almost like a cross between like regular paper and like watercolor paper. Because it's got like ridges and stuff on it. It's nice.
Okay.
It's nice.
So what are some of the perks of doing the internship?
You get to learn a lot about the publishing industry. Like, stuff they didn't even teach you in publishing school. Just, like, stuff, like, in terms of, you know, getting your metadata, which is, like, you know, all the information about the book that you don't really see. Like, where does that go? So, like, you know what I mean? So there's websites where you upload them, and then everyone takes that information and, like, puts in Indigo and stuff. And they told you what that is, but they didn't really show you the process of where it goes and how to upload it and stuff. So that's really cool. And another thing that you learn a lot of in this internship right now is like inventory management. They don't really teach you that. So like, you print a book, right? And you're like, all right, I'm going to print this book for, you know, 1,000 copies of this book. And then what do you do with that 1,000 copies? You can't just keep it at your location. You have to bring it to the distributor, but then the distributor's got to ship it to the stores, but then you still want copies so that you could sell, and it's like, yo, what are you doing here? And then, you know, how many does the store sell, and how many do you need? You know, so like, that stuff's crazy, man. Like, you could send 1,000 books, and then say you need like 50, but you only have 40. But the store that you sent the 1,000 books to, they're not going to sell that 1,000.
Right.
So they're going to send it back to you, but in like 4 months. But you need that book now, you know?
Right,
so it's like, oh my god, what do you do, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's probably the hardest part, I think.
How did
logistics?
You learn from those like little logistics and what you see now working in your internship, how are you going to be able to apply that to your comics?
Well, yeah, that's tough. I think with the level I'm at right now, we're lucky that we're able to print low runs. Like, the biggest thing ever, we're able to print like 30 copies at a time. at a reasonable price. It's not like crazy. It's not like crazy cheap, but it's not, you know, like prohibitively expensive.
Right.
So we're able to do them with this guy Alfonso from Studio Comics. He's the best.
Alfonso Espinos.
Yeah.
Shout out to Studio Comics. He's the coolest guy
in the world. And like he printed both those books, and they're like wicked. You feel them. And you feel good. And he's great, man. And he's like, he's down to do anything. You're like, I want to do this, and he's like, yeah, man, let's do it, man.
And he's and what we spoke to him recently, me and Martin from Fastball Special. Shout out, Martin. Well, what I liked about what Alfonso was saying was he doesn't stick to what has become the traditional way of doing it. If they want their book this size or this page, we accommodate that. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm just looking at Black Hole Hunters Club.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the
it's
same
been
in size.
Shorter.
Yeah. And did you guys want it that way?
Well, originally for the 12-hour comic jam, Shane drew them smaller just because it would be faster.
Okay.
And then it turned out that that size didn't scale well to regular comic size, so we just made them like that. But, so because Shane screwed up.
Yeah. Good job, Shane. No, but that's interesting because he was able to accommodate what you guys would need to make it work.
Originally, these were printed all at Gorilla Printing in Toronto, which they still exist, but they can't do, like... Well, I think they could do it now, but at the time, they couldn't do Perfect Bound stuff like that when we were doing the trade. So then we went to Alfonso, but... Yeah, Gorilla Printing, they're the ones that, like, really started that.
I think it's this weekend coming up where he's having his, like, grand opening,
yeah, tomorrow,
right? Are you going to be there?
Oh, it's in Kitchener.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know if I can
right.
make it,
that's
but
right.
I'll try.
That's
see
right.
if people are going to my room.
I was, I would love to go, but by the time I finish work and get out there, I'll just be like, oh, I missed it all. I know.
Yeah, it's a little...
Kitchener.
No, but Alfonso's the greatest. And what's great is, like, because he makes everything so easy... It really helps you to think creatively about what you want to do now.
There's no limits.
Yeah, right? Because now you're like, okay, now I have a reliable person who I can print a book for, or I can print a book with, and it's not crazy expensive, and I can do it. So now what are the possibilities, right? So then you start thinking about that, and then you're like, okay, well, there's Kickstarter, too. Oh, my God, now I can, like, fund what I want to do. So it's like... It's crazy, man. You get all these ideas coming to you now. Now that you have the means to do it.
Yeah. Do you find Kickstarter to become, quote-unquote, like the new image in a way where...
No, because Kickstarter doesn't... They don't promote anything, really. They don't have a stake in anything you do. You know what I mean?
But in the fact that you can have an idea of whatever you want...
Yeah.
And put together a product, and if the people are behind it,
well, but that's the difference is the people, right? Image Comics is like, you know, you have guys like Eric Larson and
now, right?
Yeah.
I guess even then you had the names to attach to it, but it's kind of like that, not Image Comics in the model, but in what they went originally to do, and saying we're gonna make something creator owned that's ours. This is the new version of doing something that's mine.
I wouldn't say so, because like those guys were millionaires and they were top of their career at that point, right? Like, they were the biggest comic creators in the world.
Yeah.
So I mean, for them to leave Marvel, it's like, well, okay, yeah, obviously you're gonna be successful. Like, people already know you. You know what I mean?
Whereas
with Kickstarter, it's like you don't have those gatekeepers who are like deciding on what to publish. You could just do it, and they had millions of dollars behind them to do it.
Right.
So
this is the people.
Yeah, this is like
you
no money
okay.
and the people, right?
Whereas
with Eric, with you know, Todd McFarlane, I mean, I respect everything they've done, and it's very good what they've done for like comics and stuff, but. Yeah, I mean, to think that, you know, it's a grassroots thing. Like, they had millions of dollars, you know?
Yeah, no, it was more in the sense of, like, they went against the grain.
Yeah.
And created something that nobody else would tell them, you can't do that.
And, like, to work out logistics of, like, shipping and, like, I mean, it was probably a huge undertaking to do all that stuff. And they made it work for the most part. And sometimes, creatively, the book's really weird, but... I mean, they made it work, right? So that's probably good.
That's pretty awesome, though, to know that you've got an idea and there's people who you've never met, or even some, you know, it could be friends, family who are all supportive, but you've got people behind you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, you've got a name that was built, yes, from your hard work, your skill, but it was a big corporation who kind of made your name.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, you know... Diamond or these big, huge catalogs are promoting you.
Exactly.
Where in Kickstarter's case, it's so grassroots. Where it's like, we like what you're doing. I want it.
Exactly. And it's so interesting to see Marvel Comics from the 80s versus Marvel Comics now, where they would promote creators so heavily back in the 80s, you know? Like with John Byrne, they'd be like, oh, John Byrne is back working on Fantastic Four. It was a big deal that John Byrne was working on these comics. Whereas nowadays, Marvel will not promote a creator. Like, I mean, they'll talk about it. They'll be like, hey, you know, like...
For some stuff. For some stuff.
Yo, for everything, man, like, they don't promote their creators as much as they used to. You know what I mean? They used to do, like, creator profiles. They used to do all these things, like... You know, creators would have, like, you know, personalities and stuff. Nowadays, they'll do, like, oh, watch this guy draw. And you're like, you never even see his face. And you're like, who is this guy? And then they'll promote barely, like, the really, really big guys. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like, I feel like the Captain America Somni Ray team is kind of, exactly. like, a thing. But you don't really... Yeah, you're right. I agree. Like, I pick up some of those old trades,
yeah.
and at the back, there's, like, an interview with Walt Simonson when he got off the Fantastic Four or something.
They don't have those anymore because they know that if they promote their creators too much, then they'll be really big and just move to creator-owned projects and make tons more money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Marvel doesn't want to promote those guys anymore, and they want to...
Right, it's different.
They don't... And, I mean, like, it's a business, so, yeah, sure, like, that's fine, but... It just sucks that you don't have superstar creators anymore to the level that they were in the 90s. Like, obviously, Scott Snyder is, like, huge, and Jeff Johns is huge. But, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever reach that level again where you have big corporations pushing these guys. Like, what? Rob Liefeld was on a Levi's commercial. Like, what the hell? That's crazy.
He was on,
like,
what? Wasn't he on, like, Jay Leno or Letterman back then?
Yeah, one of those, like, late-night talk shows.
That's true, yeah. He's got the personality for it.
Yes.
That's one of the things. If you were offered a job for Marvel or DC, what character would be your dream character to write?
Oh, man.
Do you have one? That would be maybe one you have a story in mind for, or you just know you love that character that you would be able to fit into their shoes.
I think like early Thanos, like Jim Starlin Thanos, I would really like to write. Like anything cosmic Marvel, I really like, but I think modern Thanos not so much, because like modern Thanos now is like this big bad guy,
right?
You know what I mean? Whereas early Jim Starlin Thanos, he was just a guy who's just like. He just wanted to impress death, you know? He just wanted to, like...
Yeah. It was very poetic.
Yeah, and what's so great about Thanos is that he doesn't want to succeed, you know? And that's, like, his whole thing. Thanos is, like, the death wish. And, like, even though he has all these ambitions, he still is never going to succeed because he just doesn't want to succeed, you know? It's
interesting.
And so, but nowadays, he's just, like, this really powerful guy who, like, punches stuff, and you're like, yeah, who cares about that?
Not quite as interesting.
Yeah, right? It's not as cool. So... Early Thanos I'd really like to write, but other than that, I don't know, I really like, just like weirdo characters, I think, like,
off the wall good characters.
Yeah, right, like, I don't know, I think it'd be cool to write like a Beast standalone, if Marvel
that's
ever
interesting.
Did like a...
Yeah, that's never been done, right?
I'm sure, I think Jay Lee, I think he started on a Beast standalone.
Yeah?
Or it might have been one of those, like, you know, like Marvel 2-in-1s or something.
Yeah, but nothing comes to mind that's, like, standout. Like, that's the definitive.
I think Beast is, like, a cool character. I don't know why they don't use him more.
Yeah, that'd be good. That's a good idea. I never thought of that. That's
there
a good idea.
There you go, yeah. But
with appearances from Wonder Man.
There you go. Or, like, Quasar. Pregnant Quasar, though.
Quasar. All right. I want to... Before we close out, I want to have a little bit of fun. I've been having fun this whole time too, but I want to take it away from, like, I just want to do some fan stuff now. So I've been told you're a very big fan of potato chips.
Chips, not just potato chips, any kind of chips.
Any kind of chips.
Corn chips.
Chips.
Poker chips. Chips off the old block. Yeah,
exactly. chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if you could pick 5 flavors in your cupboard that you needed to have, what were the top 5 chip flavors?
Top 5 chips. In order? Like, it's gotta be in order?
However you want to do it. This is your top five.
All right, random order here. You got All Dressed from the Ruffles All Dressed.
You need Ruffles.
Yeah, Ruffles All Dressed. There's no other All Dressed that's good enough. The Ruffles is where it's at.
I think you're right.
Right? Obviously. You got some Doritos, regular flavored Doritos. Like, just the cheddar nacho cheese.
Just right, not yet. Yeah. My wife's a big fan of the spicy.
The sweet chili heat, that was my next one.
I like the sweet chili heat. That's my favorite Dorito.
Yeah, there you go. And then Miss Vicky, salt and vinegar, number four right there.
Miss There's something about the texture of a Miss Vicky chip.
Right? It's just like good, satisfying crunch. Delicious.
Do you like that better or a Lay's?
Lay's is trash, man. Like, Lay's is such a fragile chip.
Right? You can't dip it or nothing.
Yeah, you can't dip nothing. And then maybe like a good corn chip for like salsa. I really like chips and salsa.
Like the Tostitos?
Yeah, yeah. Yo, he got this from Shane, didn't he? Shane thinks I love chips so much. And like, I do. I do love chips. But he makes it seem like I eat chips like every 5 minutes. I mean, I would if I could.
How often do you eat chips?
Once a week at least. I mean, sometimes, like,
that's not bad.
I watch like basketball and I'll eat chips, and it's like, man, these guys are like in the peak of their physical fitness here and just eating chips.
So, chips or popcorn?
No, chips, 100%, man. Popcorn's like, yeah, popcorn's weak, man. I mean, popcorn's good, but.
I'm a big popcorn fan.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like flavored popcorn?
If I go to the movies, I have to get popcorn. I have to. It doesn't matter if I've eaten dinner.
You just have to.
Yeah, like, what's the point of going to the
theater? Do you put, like, butter and stuff like
that? I don't put the butter. I just get, I feel like the salt and, like, the theater style is good enough.
Okay.
But at home, my mom taught me how to make, like, popcorn out of the pot. Like, with the, she adds a couple different oils and, like, the salt, pepper,
next level,
and little cayenne, little parmesan on it.
Yo, what?
And
oh, my God.
It's a hit.
Yo, I gotta try this.
I used to always do the microwave, right? And then my mom made it like that for me, and I was just like, oh my God, like, this is incredible. Whoa, I didn't know you could do this.
I gotta try this.
Yeah.
So you, before it pops, you put all this stuff in, or like after it pops?
So you just put the in a nice big pot, you add as much, you know, cup or two of the kernels, right? A little bit of olive oil at the bottom, whatever oil you like, coconut oil. Olive oil is good. But then you let it pop, fills up the thing, you see the lid, it's so exciting. The lid lifts up. But then afterwards, you just add whatever you want to it. And sometimes you even get like the Mrs. Dash flavors. Throw those in there. So then now your popcorn is not just like salt and pepper. You can, you know,
it's Dash.
It's you could add anything to it.
Try that.
A little bit of caramel sauce if you're getting adventurous.
With all that stuff, like
No. You can like, you know, just put a little bit of salt and a little caramel, whatever you want. I've seen people mix it up with the parmesan.
Got to.
It's good.
Even with the caramel?
No.
Now, is it the powder stuff that comes in the shaker, or do you like grate your own parmesan?
I don't grate it. It's the one that comes like in the already grated style. You know what? What was the other thing I did for a little bit? Instead of the parmesan, okay, I kind of cheated. When I went grocery shopping, they have the kernels sell the flavors.
So I
threw a little bit of the buffalo wing on that.
That sounds good.
It's good, man. And it's a very inexpensive and not as unhealthy snack.
That's true. Corn basically is nothing in it.
Yeah. And it doesn't have all the extra chemicals that you get in like the other stuff. So,
but that's where the flavors are, man.
That's why you add your flavors, Ricky.
Oh shit, true.
It's good. True. Once you start, you're gonna get addicted. The key is the timing of the popping. Right? Okay. Listening to it and making sure you don't burn it. There's nothing worse than burnt popcorn.
That's true.
Some people like burnt popcorn.
I like the half-popped kernels. Those are good.
The ones that get stuck right in the back of your mouth.
Yeah, or like the ones that are like just opening up, you know, and so you could like bite through them easily, but they're like super crunchy.
Yeah. So, I recently spoke with an artist that makes comics, obviously, but he refuses to watch any superhero comic book related movies.
Is that Shane?
I'm not. Yo, no, I'm
Shane's
not going
to lose it.
I just think it's very strange that you work in an industry and you refuse to watch any comic book movies. Are you in that? Is that something like, I make them, I don't want to watch them?
No, I watch every single one of them. I'm going to watch Thor tomorrow, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Where are you watching it?
Like the movie theater?
No. what's your go-to theater?
Oh, there's one near my house, Cineplex.
Okay, so you're going back home to watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
I'm not going to go to a little fancy cinema.
So, you watch them all. There's some artists out there who shall remain nameless.
That rhymes with Bane, Aaron.
What are your top five comic book movies?
Top five comic movies? Man, you know what? I was supposed to think about this, but I didn't.
Okay, what are some of the ones, if someone said to you, okay, I've never seen a comic book movie before, and I think they're stupid. Recommend one that you...
I think Sin City, like, the first one... Even the second one's pretty good, but the first Sin City is, like... Yeah, it's dope. And it really fits into, like, comics and stuff. That one's really good. So that's one. Probably, like, Captain America, Winter Soldier. It's probably another one.
That's in my top five.
Yeah, that's a good one. What else? There's, like...
Are you a Frank Miller fan?
Early Frank Miller. There's like a time, like while he was writing Sin City, you can like see him go crazy as he's writing Sin City.
Okay, explain that to me. I always hear about Frank Miller. He's crazy now. Dude, what?
He's nuts.
What happened?
Yo, he's crazy.
What? So, explain
it. I think in the 90s, I think he moved to like Miami or something. He moved somewhere, and I think that really messed him up. What was in that city?
Miami?
I don't know where it was, but I think he moved somewhere. I could be wrong. But if you read Sin City, it's just like, yo, what is wrong with this man? Like, at this point, it's so, like, it just gets so weird. Like, Sin City's good, and I mean, everything is fine in that, but you can really see he's starting to go crazy. And then he released a book called Holy Terror. That was, like, the worst, because it's basically, he wanted to write a Batman story where Batman just kills terrorists. And then DC was like, no, you can't do that. So then... He made a new character that looked exactly like Batman, acted exactly like Batman, but just murdered terrorists mercilessly throughout the whole thing.
You a Batman fan?
Yeah, I think I am.
Do you think Batman should kill? Some people are like, yeah, Batman should kill.
No, man, he shouldn't kill. It's ridiculous.
Right?
He's like, he's a good guy. You guys don't kill.
But I feel like I remember when BVS came out, my argument was... Batman just doesn't, like, if you're going to make him go over the edge, there's got to be repercussions for it. Because the whole premise of the character is that he doesn't go over the edge because he knows, right? Okay. Like, if I go over that edge, I'm going to become like the guy. So when I was like, he doesn't use guns liberally, right? And everyone's like, oh, you're effing idiot. If you would have seen or if you would have read Detective 27, don't you remember he used guns? But obviously you don't know Batman. And I'm like, well, he doesn't, we all know he doesn't use guns.
Yeah, right?
So the whole thing about Holy Terror, like Batman is killing.
It's so bad. It's terrible. It's, you just read it and it's offensively bad.
You know what I mean? Offensively bad. I like that.
Because he's just murdering terrorists, and you're just like, why is he doing this? And you're like, there's no reason for him to be doing all this, and it's so bad. And then there's that whole, like, when Occupy Wall Street was happening, he was all, like, up in arms about all these people protesting and stuff, and it's like, yeah, what's wrong with you, man? And then even...
Does he have a specific political stance?
I think he's just a grumpy old man, you know? Like, he just doesn't like anything at this point. And he's like, what, like 50, and it looks like he's dying. Like,
he looks terrible. No. He doesn't look like he's dying. He looks dead.
Yeah.
He looks like a walking corpse.
He's like
corpse.
So young. It's like, what the hell,
What's
man?
Frightening is that Stan Lee looked more exuberant than Frank Miller. Yeah.
But it's weird, man, because like Frank Miller, he's great up until a certain point, right? Like you read Dark Knight Returns, obviously he's great. But then you read the second one, The Return of the Dark Knight or whatever.
Dark Knight Strikes Again.
You're like, what is this?
Did you like the some people say, hey, if you it's actually pretty artistically avant-garde.
Yeah, I mean it.
But I can't get past the art.
Yeah, the art is pretty bad. There's an article online where a guy recolors Frank Miller's art. and it actually looks amazing when he does it, because he really amplifies like the pop art aesthetic and like really amplifies like the weirdness of it, and it looks great. Whereas like if you do traditional coloring on his stuff, it's like it doesn't make any sense.
Did you enjoy the recent thing that he did, revisiting the Dark Knight universe?
I mean, I dug it. I dug what they're doing, but I don't know how involved he was in
right stuff. I think his name was involved.
Yeah, he probably told like Brian Azzarello, like, oh yeah, maybe this happens, maybe that happens,
but yeah,
they just did whatever they wanted after.
Yeah, I agree. So
so Sin City for the
Winter
movie
Soldier.
Winter Soldier. Can I get a cup of water? Thank you. Sin City, what was the other one? Winter Soldier. I would have said the first Guardians of the Galaxy, but then I saw it again recently and I didn't like it as much.
Okay.
There's too much emphasis on how much of the losers they are. Uh-huh. And it's like every 5 minutes they emphasize, like, these guys are losers. And it's like, I get it. They're losers. Let's move on. You know what I mean?
It had the attention that it had because it was so different?
I think so, yeah.
And do you think it, as time goes on, it won't age as well?
Yeah, probably. Just because it was like, just too much. You're like, I get it, they're losers, let's do something else. And they're like, well, look at this guy, he's a loser. And it's like, all right, okay, what about something else? And it's like, oh, this guy, he's a loser. And even like the second one, there's like a lot of that too, you know what I mean? Where it's just like,
right, I like them both a lot, but I feel like the second one was trying to capitalize too much on the fact that we're the one that can be funny. So they were forcing a little bit too many of the jokes.
And it's interesting, too, because the first one was written initially by a woman, and the second one was all James Gunn. And you can really see the difference between, you know, like a male perspective and a female perspective in terms of the universe, right? The second one's all full of, like, dick jokes and fart jokes, and you're like, what? Where did that all come from? You know what I mean? The humor is not as subtle in the second one.
And I think sometimes subtle humor is more funnier later on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's not on the list there. So Sin City, Winter Soldier. What else? There's
Guardians was close, but didn't quite make it.
Not quite. And then, maybe, I'm trying to think of, like, you're gonna edit all this stuff there, right? All this
it's all left in, yeah.
Oh, jeez. You do any editing on this thing?
Sometimes. it's very rare.
Alright. Oh, jeez. I'm trying to think, man. Like, what is another... Live, Die, Repeat. Or Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, that was dope.
That was based off an anime. Are we considering manga part of...
Sure. This is your top five list. You make the rules.
Okay. Edge of Tomorrow is wicked.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
I forgot that was based off of a comic.
Yeah, most of the good comics are not... Like, you don't quite know that it's based off of a comic. I think, like, the first Blade, I think, was pretty dope. I really liked the first Blade.
I think that was something that opened the door of possibility, saying this could be done.
Yeah, right.
Like, from what I've heard, is that it kept the flame alive at a time when the concept of comic book movies was dead.
Because
Batman and Robin. But Blade kind of kept that flame alive.
Yeah. And I think because I grew up in the 90s, I'm going to have to go with The Crow. Yeah, James O'Barr's masterpiece from the 90s.
Just met him.
The Crow, yeah.
Just met and talked. Have you ever met him?
No, I never met him.
It was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah. Is he like a goth emo kid?
Because
he basically sparked a whole fucking generation.
Not a kid anymore.
Yeah, okay.
But he's... Thank you very much. He's a big Joy Division fan.
Okay, so he's an old school guy.
Old, original. Yeah. But it was pretty interesting that... I'm sure you know, if you're a fan of The Crow, it was inspired a lot from his own life experience.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He died and was resurrected?
he lost his girlfriend. His fiancée was murdered.
Oh, what?
So that kind of... He originally wrote The Crow as just something personal for himself, as like a form of catharsis or therapy. And then he
he released it?
He approached the person who was publishing certain indie comics in Detroit at the time. I forgot the name of it now. And he said, here's you know, something I've worked on. And the guy, I don't think, was a really big fan of it at the time, but it then became like a cult hit. It's on our Hamilton Comic Con episode.
That's
We interview him, and he gets into detail about it. I'm not doing it justice, but they're making a new one.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Jason Momoa is going to be the Crow.
That doesn't make any sense. He's too big. The Crow's supposed to be like so small.
He actually sent in a tape showing how he would play it, because he really was a fan and wanted to play it so much that he auditioned and sent the tape in himself.
Yo, that's weird.
Yeah.
Alright, well,
so Momoa's
fine. That's cool. Yeah, the Crow's really cool. I think just like aesthetically, like the movie, you watch it and you're just like, whoa, that's really cool. I mean, obviously it doesn't age as well. Like, you see it, and it's obviously a product of its time, but still really cool, I think. And you can really appreciate it for what it is. And it's not like the comics are very great. Like, you read them and you're just like, James O'Barr's art, probably not the greatest. You know what I mean? But I mean, that it works at that
time. If you're listening, James, we love you.
No, I mean, it's great. It gets the job done. But he'll even admit, I'd imagine, that it's like, you know, it's not amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
It's like Kevin Eastman, right? Like, I don't feel like Kevin Eastman is a great artist. I mean, for what he does, it's good enough, but I wouldn't say he's like amazing.
I think a lot of the stuff nowadays, especially coming out, is borrowing from that aesthetic of, it's not so much how good or how great this artist is, but how well it translates the story you're telling.
Yeah, for sure. It's like when someone is like, wow, look at this painting. It's like photorealistic. It's like, who cares? A photo is photorealistic. You know, that's what, if I want to see something as it is, I'll just look at a photo.
Right.
I want to see an artist's interpretation of what that is, you know? So, I mean, even though I'm saying James O'Barr or Kevin Eastman aren't good, technically, I mean, they're still great in what they do, right?
Because it evokes something in you.
You get those emotions that, you know, from what they do. And maybe it's not, you know, technically correct, but emotionally it's correct.
You know? Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, well, sometimes we get caught up with the technique of, this is not, you know, the scope, or not the scope, but the way we're looking at it, the, what's the word that they use all the time?
Perspective?
Perspective, there you go, thank you, my mind went blank. It's not the way it should be, but it's making me feel something when I look at it. Like, I'm getting the reaction that the story is meant to give. Yeah. So how many is that? Is that five? There's one more, I think.
No, Sin City, The Crow,
Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier, and
Sin City, The Crow, Winter Soldier. You said another one. What was that other one you said? The Blade.
The Blade.
So you got one more.
Oh, man.
I like your list because it's not quite as predictable. You're pulling out some comic book movies that people might forget were comic book movies.
This one. Oh, my God. This one's so good. Surrogates. Bruce Willis. Dude. The Surrogates comic is so great, and the Surrogates movie is just as great. It's great. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Surrogates.
No.
So basically what it is like, people can live inside of a robot through their home. So it's almost like they just put on a device and then they live their life through a robot.
Who wrote that comic book? I
can't remember, but I think it was IDW published it. And so basically the world now is just inhabited by these robots, and then the people are at home just kind of enjoying their life. And then Bruce Willis is a cop, and the surrogates, which are the robots, they start dying, but then when they die, the people at home die as well. And so now the cops are like, what the hell, how are these people dying? So they have to like figure it all out, and then there's like a cult of people who don't do any of the surrogate stuff. God, it's way good. And then, spoiler, at the end, Bruce, they destroy all surrogates, like the whole surrogate network. And then Bruce Willis's wife, who is having a hard time living not outside the surrogates thing, she kills herself. And I was like, yo, they're not going to do that in the movie. And they did it in the movie. I was like, this is so cool.
Robert Venditti. That's who wrote Surrogates. Do you know, are you familiar with his stuff? No, he's writing, he wrote a 51-issue run of Exo Manowar.
Oh, wow.
And he did, I think he's doing Green Lantern. Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns right now.
Is it good?
Yeah, it is good.
He's great.
He's a good writer.
Surrogates is wicked. And then there's more Surrogates after, like more volumes, and they're all just as good.
I think that was one of his first comics that he did, just as like a, you know, shot in the dark, putting out a book up there. I think it was Top Shelf or Top Cow. I don't know. Which
one. Yeah, Top Shelf, and I think now they're part of IDW. Or, so, Surrogates is good.
Have you ever read any of the Valiant books that are coming out?
When they first came out, like when they relaunched back in like 2013 or something, I was reading them and I was like, yo, these are really good. And then I just
fell off.
Because I think, again, some of those characters are a product of their time. Like, they have a character named like Ninjak. And it's like, how 90s can you get with a character named Ninjak? You know what I mean?
I was not I didn't know anything about Valiant comics. And when they came back out, I'm just like, oh, there's Image, there's Dark Horse, there's IDW, and now Valiant. Like, I don't know. I'm just going to stick with what I know. But Ninjak.
That's what got you?
No. I bought at one of the fan expos, not this one that just passed, the year before, I went to their panel. They had such a great sales pitch of their books. They were so excited about them, as they should be. But they had this deal, 5 trades for $30. All their entry-level trades, right? 5 for $30. So I bought the first XO. I bought the first Ninjak. I bought Ivar the Time Walker, right? Ninjak was incredible.
Oh, yeah?
Matt Kint and Clay Mann on art. It was really good.
Yeah, I mean, Valiant's great, man. What they do, like, I think that's a company I would love to work for, is Valiant, because they're not as big as everything else, but they really care about what they're doing.
Yeah.
So.
We actually, our first interview that we did was with, surprisingly, Matt Kint. We just sent him an email. He said yes. But one of the interesting things that he said that I appreciated and look at comic books a little differently now was that difference with Valiant, he's worked with DC, he's worked with Marvel, is that you write the story and what your vision is, they build the marketing around what you've done, as opposed to you having to fulfill the promise of whatever they're marketing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like with Marvel, their marketing is based off of what these like top 5 creators have decided what to do with the world, right? So yeah, you really get kind of pigeonholed into, you know, whatever they decide to do, right? So, yeah, Valiant's like, they're dope.
Give it a shot. Give Ninjak a shot. All as right, silly man. As it yeah. sounds, a high recommendation.
It does sound very silly.
A lot of their concepts sound silly, but they got a Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, he's doing Bloodshot. Right?
Matt Kint, Robert Venditti, the Harbinger book, really good series.
Yeah.
It's a safe bet. If you don't know what to read, try a Valiant book. Yeah, it's really good.
How much are you getting paid right now by Valiant?
Nothing. I'm not. I'm like, yeah, I wish I was. I wish I was getting free books from them.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are the 5 books. Or five
movies. Okay.
And then whenever the Valiant releases their movies, I'm sure they'll be great at this one.
I hope they're good. I hope it doesn't become so, like, every movie coming out is a comic book movie that it just kills it.
Yeah,
you know? Is there anything you're looking forward to coming out? Like, what's a character or a movie you're like, I hope this is great?
I'm kind of excited for the Avengers just to see, like, how the hell they do that. Because it's... Civil War was so jam-packed full of stuff that you watch and you're just like, oh my god, there's so much happening.
Did you like it?
I mean, I think what they did was good for what they had to do.
Yeah.
So Avengers is just going to be like, Jesus, what? Like, oh my god, there's like, what, 20 people in this movie? And it's like...
They said there's going to be more than that.
It's crazy. Like, I don't know how they're going to do it, but... Especially because they just announced in... What was it? Guardians of the Galaxy 2, that like Adam Warlock, they just acknowledged
him. Yeah.
So, but he's got a whole complex backstory, and he's part of Infinity War. And
do you think we can tell the Infinity story without Silver Surfer?
Yeah. He didn't really do anything in Infinity War.
Okay. I've read Infinity Gauntlet, not War.
Oh, well, yeah, I think they're going with Infinity Gauntlet, but yeah. Because he's not really in Infinity Gauntlet, is he?
He is.
Is he important?
He's got a whole, like, his own series that ties into Infinity.
Yeah, well, he was pretty popular back then, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. Well, we've been here for quite a while. This has been a blast.
I think you've been.
well, since we started recording, it's been about an hour and 40 minutes. Jeez. And besides the eating.
And you're not going to edit this at all?
Why? This is all gold, man. I'll only edit the parts where we talk bad about Shane. Just kidding. I appreciate you and your busy schedule that you got, giving me some time.
Thank you,
more
man.
Than enough time. This was great. Thank you so much. I'm happy I got both of you guys on. For those who want to reach out and get in touch with either you or read your stuff, where can they do it?
Man. I guess like Facebook or Instagram. Instagram, I'm king.k.rule. Facebook, I'm just Ricky Lima. I should really set up like an online store or something. But I don't.
Should.
And then Twitter, I'm King K. Rule as well, which is like he's a UK artist now, but when I made it, he didn't exist. And now I get all these tweets being like, hey man, I love your music. I'm like, that's not me, man. That's not me.
Show them your book.
I know, I
yeah,
should.
I also make comic books, see if they'll
yeah,
bite.
I know, right? But these guys, they think I'm that UK artist. So I've been inadvertently following his career for years now.
Yeah.
Because, like, he just changed his name maybe, like, 3 or 4 years ago. And I've had my Twitter handle for, like, you know, like, 7, 8 years. So I'm just waiting for his PR team to be like, yo, we want to, like, buy this domain from you. They're like, yeah.
And then the publishing company starts. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. I know they don't really care, but thank you to the pub that we're at, who hosted
you
us.
Tweet this at them. Actually.
Yeah, we got the booth here that sits probably 10 all to ourselves.
Yeah.
We look important. So again, thank you everybody for listening. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and. Stick close and listen. Keep listening to us because our next episode is episode 100. So you close. I gave you a special episode 99, Wayne Gretzky
Sweet.
Status.
Yes.
So stay tuned. We got episode 100 coming up, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, Ricky Lima. You are the man. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you soon.